Sandy saw and heard none of that. What he heard was the hum. What he saw were the flashes, turning the ground mist smoke into electric dragons. What he saw was the column of stuttery purple light rising from the conical roof vent, stabbing up into the darkening air. Tony grabbed him, shook him. Another silent gunshell of light went off in the shed, turning the lenses of Tony's sunglasses into small, blue fireballs. He was shouting, although there was no need to. Sandy could hear him perfectly. There was the humming sound, and someone murmuring, "Good God Almighty." And that was all. "Sandy, were you here when this started?" "Yes," he found himself shouting back in spite of himself. The situation somehow demanded that they shout. The light flared and glared, mute lightning. Each time it went off, the barracks seemed to jump forward like something that was alive, the shadows of the troopers running up its bored side. "What started it? What set it off?" "I don't know." "Get inside. Call Curtis. Tell him what's happening. Tell him to get his ass over here now." Sandy resisted the urge to tell his SC that he wanted to stay and see what happened next. In a very elementary way, the idea was stupid to begin with. You couldn't actually see anything. It was too bright. Even with sunglasses, it was too bright. Besides, he knew an order when he heard it. He went inside, stumbling over the steps. It was impossible to judge depth or distance in those brilliant stutter flashes, and shuffled his way to dispatch, waving his arms in front of him. In his swimming, dazzled eyesight, the barracks was nothing but overlaid shadows. The only visual reality for him at that moment was the great purple flashes floating in front of him. Matt Babicki's radio was an endless blare of static with a few voices sticking out of it like the feet or fingers of buried men. Sandy picked up the regular telephone beside the dedicated 911 line, thinking that would be out too. Sure it would. But it was fine. He dialed Kurt's number from the list tacked to the bulletin board. Even the telephone seemed to jump with fright each time one of those purple-white flashes lit the room. Michelle answered the phone and said Kurt was out back, mowing the grass before it got dark. She didn't want to call him in, that was clear in her voice. But when Sandy asked her a second time, she said, "All right, just a minute, don't you guys ever give it a rest?" The wait seemed interminable to Sandy. The thing in Shed B kept flashing like some crazy neon apocalypse, and the room seemed to waver into a slightly different perspective every time it did. Sandy found it nearly impossible to believe something generating such brilliance could be anything but destructive. Yet he was still alive and breathing. He touched his cheeks with the hand not holding the telephone, checking for burns or swelling. There was neither. "For the time being, at least," he told himself. He kept waiting for the cops outside to begin screaming as if the thing in the old garage exploded or melted or let something out, something unimaginable with burning electric eyes. Such ideas were a million miles from the usual run of cop thoughts, but Sandy Dearborn had never felt less like a cop and more like a scared little boy. At last, Kurt picked up the telephone, sounding both curious and out of breath. "You have to come right now," Sandy told him. "Sarge says so." Kurt knew what it was about immediately. "What's it doing, Sandy?" "Shooting off fireworks, flashes and sparks. You can't even look at Shed B." "Is the building on fire?" "I don't think so, but there's no way to tell for sure. You can't see inside. It's too bright. Get over here." The phone at Kurt's end crashed down without another word spoken, and Sandy went back outside. If they were going to be nuked, he decided, he wanted to be with his friends when it happened.